The date is February 28th. I'm Representative Mark Olson. Welcome to the committee. We now have a quorum, and I'm going to ask somebody to look over the rules and, or excuse me, we'll look over the, it's Monday, the minutes. Representative Sharon.
I'll move the minutes.
Oh, you've already done that. Great. Representative Sharon moves the minutes from February 23rd. Discussion to adoption of the minutes. Approval of the minutes. See none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Sharon. First on the agenda is House File 982, Representative Tingelstad. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think I have a member, a co-author, who's going to move the bill officially.
I would so move, Mr. Chair.
To the General Register, I understand.
Actually, taxes, I believe. Taxes.
Representative Lencheski.
Mr. Chair, I was just speaking with Representative Tingelstad about this. I don't think the public finance part of the Minnesota House has been assigned yet. This is a public finance bill, and that category hasn't been assigned to this committee or local property tax or the full tax committee. I can only assume it should go to taxes, but if the author would have it go to the General Register, it is a public finance issue, but I am unaware. Maybe you can enlighten us, Mr. Chair, as to which exact chair has the final determination for public finances here.
Well, I think you're right, Representative Lencheski. I've asked the committee administrator to always make a point of finding out where these are supposed to go, so we have a couple people checking on it. The authors should know as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have down the General Register, but your point is well taken that yet hasn't been addressed. And we can always move it one way or the other. If you want it to go to the General Register, we'll move it there and then Representative Lencheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, may I suggest if it's all right with you and the author that it in fact, we move to the General Register, and then if Representative Krinke or Representative Vandeveer has an issue with that, then we could pull it on the floor and re-refer it to taxes. Would that work for you, Mr. Chair?
That's fine.
Then I would so move to the General Register.
Representative Lencheski moves House File 982 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. Representative Tingelstad, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 982 was in the House bill that passed last year, and because we never went to a conference committee with that tax bill, public finance bill, it didn't make it all the way through. So this is fairly similar to what happened last year, and basically what the bill does is it extends the time in which cities can establish a housing improvement area without special legislation, and also adds a reporting requirement. There's a handout with the materials that members got, which was put together by House Research, and talks about the use of this legislation currently. And I represent the city of Coon Rapids, and they contacted me because the current law says that it would sunset June 30th, 2005, and this has been something that's been helpful in the communities, and so they asked to extend the sunset on that. And there's a good overview by House Research, which kind of gives the details of that. And then in addition, I have with me Mark Novinsky from the city of Coon Rapids, who is here to testify on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Tingelstad, members of the committee.
Would you identify yourself for the tape, please?
Thank you. My name is Mark Novinsky. I'm Community Development Director for the city of Coon Rapids.
Novinsky, you said?
Novinsky.
Thank you.
Certainly. As Representative Tingelstad pointed out, I'm here to support the extension of the sunset provision as stated in House File 982. As many of you may know, a townhouse association or development or sometimes other developments are combined in an association. And particularly in a townhouse association, the entire development is sort of constrained by the fact that when one side of the building needs improvement or re-roofing, you know, probably everything does, and it's a little bit difficult for, you know, let's say 30 homeowners to get together and secure financing either directly through their individual lenders. It's nearly impossible, I understand, as an association, for the association to go ahead and get private financing. So what we're starting to see is that we've got townhouse developments that are 25 or 30 years old in needs of roofs and siding and windows and doors and things like that that, you know, just aren't. They're just not able to get financed if because they don't have enough cash in their reserves. And I guess as a single family homeowner, if you don't have enough cash in your savings account, you can always go to the bank and get a home equity loan and you know, kind of go that route to make those major capital improvements. But it's very difficult for a homeowners association to do that. So what this bill allows is for the association to petition to come before the city and seek financing from the city. The city basically acts as a conduit and really nothing more. The city can either loan the association funds from either its accounts or float bonds, and then those costs are put back on to each homeowner in the association on a prorated basis. So the homeowners are basically just repaying those costs up to a period of 15 years on their property taxes. If they sell their property or refinance, it's all there as part of record, just as the tax statement is, or if there's an improvement made to a street out front, you know, that special assessment shows up on the taxes. So it's all very much there. What we are finding is that most people will go through this process and then, because they can act individually at this point, refinance the mortgage they have on their townhome, and we're being repaid in a very short period of time. And I guess one example, I think the first district we set up in 2002 was about $600,000 in total cost to improve, and we've only got a balance left on that of $23,000. So we're seeing those funds come back through almost immediately. And that's mainly because people can get a better rate, I think, out there than they can from the city. I'd like to point out that the city's costs are, there's really no cost to the city to do this. And we're including, you know, our staff time and our bonding costs if we have to do that. That all gets, you know, rolled in just like closing costs on a mortgage. So there's really no cost to the city. No risk to the city because everything is tied to that particular property, and we're finding this to just be a great tool to help prevent blight and maintain some sustainability of our townhouses in Coon Rapids. And quite honestly, as demographics change, as people move from single-family homes into townhomes, as the land supply in the metro area becomes less and less, and we see more townhomes being built, just so that as a matter of cost, we're gonna need to have a tool like this, I think, more and more in the future. So, with that, I would take any questions you may have.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tingle said, if we're going to need it more and more in the future, why are we not just repealing the sunset rather than just extending it for a couple of years?
Representative Hillstrom, members, that's a good suggestion. And actually, I was just talking to Mr. Novinsky from City of Coon Rapids here, and they just had a hearing in the Senate, and that's actually what they did in the Senate just a little while ago. So I'd be open to amending that as the committee so desires.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is this for every community, or is this just specific to your community? Or all cities have these housing improvement areas?
Representative Mr. Whiskey?
Mr. Chair, it is a statewide tool that's available to all cities.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tingle said, I would be willing to repeal it in its entirety if you let me know which section I ought to change it to make it the same as the Senate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pilgrim, I believe that if you take Section 1 out of the bill, and where's counsel here, if we can get some assistance, Ms. Dyson, I believe that takes care of what Representative Pilgrim is addressing.
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and members, in order to repeal the sunset, you would delete Section 1 from the bill, but then add a repealer of Minnesota Statute Section 428A.21, which is the section that's currently amended in the bill, but you'd want to repeal the section as well as take it out of the bill.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd make that motion.
Is the committee okay with waiving the 24-hour rule on that change? Hearing no objections, the motion is accepted. Discussion on the motion. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So, there's any further questions on the bill as amended?
Further questions to the bill as amended? Seeing none, Representative Lencheski renews her motion that House File 982 be recommended to pass as amended and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the bill is passed to be sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Engelstad. Next on the agenda, I understand we're moving to Representative Garofalo. Oh, we are. Is that right, Lee? House File 1044, 1044. I understand this needs to go to government operations, Representative Grapple.
It needs to go to taxes as well, but I think both.
The deadline is later for taxes, so.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1044 for approval and referral to the Government Operations Committee.
Representative Grapple moves that House File 1044 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. Representative Garofalo, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Joining me today, well, maybe you should introduce yourself.
Yep. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Judge Shetton. I'm with the Metropolitan Council. Nice to see you again.
And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, just so you know, we did talk to each other beforehand and make sure that our suits do match each other. So,
stole my question.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the legislation before you is for the creation of a regional water supply study. But this would, as we all know, the Twin Cities metro area is growing and growing rapidly. This legislation would allow for a study to examine the current needs of the metropolitan area for water as well into the future. I wish the water tables and our sources of water were followed municipal and county lines. Unfortunately, they don't. And it's an agency initiative by the Metropolitan Council to study this issue and to make recommendations and offer guidance to county and city authorities. Judd, if you care to expound further on the legislation.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Garofalo has it exactly right. What the council's asking to do is to create an advisory committee made up of members of the Met Council, Department of Agriculture, the Pollution Control Agency, the DNR, and there was one more, DNR, Ag, PCA, and Department of Health. Thank you, Dan. And with that, we're also asking that there be members from two of the metropolitan counties as well as members from six metropolitan cities that will get together to create a study that will let us know what the current conditions of the drinking water supply in the metropolitan agencies are. Since the Met Council is our responsibility is to plan for the future, we would like to see what or if there are any problems in water table issues, and we feel that we are the appropriate department to do this since we look at things in a regional basis and also in a planning basis. way. What we are proposing to do is to dismantle a program that we call the Housing Bond Credit Enhancement Program. It is a program that we have had since 1994. Our CFO, Beth Woods from Anderson, is here to discuss that. And I also would like to tell members that what we are proposing to do is within the council's jurisdiction currently. What we are doing is coming to you to make sure that we can transfer these funds to allow us to do that. And with that, I think that's pretty much the bill. We are happy to have great bipartisan support with Representative Garofalo, Representative Hornstein, and Representative Osment, who is very excited about this bill. And I guess I'll take any questions. If there are any technical questions, I also have Keith Bettelman, who's from our Department of Environmental Services at the Met Council, who can speak to this in much more detail than I can. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sutton. Questions? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick comment. I wanted to thank Representative Garofalo and the Metropolitan Council for bringing this forward. You know, we do have some serious issues, members, with water supply in our region, and many of us remember the drought in 1988, and we've had subsequent droughts, and we don't really think about water until we have these, you know, sprinkler bans occasionally and whatnot, but we have a very uneven system in terms of the water table, and we have extremely, as Representative Garofalo mentioned, I mean, we have a million more folks coming to the region in the next 25 years, and you know, we could be perhaps not in a situation like Nevada and Colorado, but we're certainly approaching that with our water table. So if we're going to grow efficiently and effectively, we've got to start now in terms of you know, getting a handle on this issue. And when I was on the Met Council in 2001, I raised this issue, and you know, people kind of nodded sympathetically and then went about their jobs. And I think, unfortunately, we really haven't had the action we need until now. So thank you. I think this is worthy of support. I know there's some concerns in terms of the, you know, some of the makeup of the committee and other kinds of concerns I know that Representative Holberg will bring forward. But in sum, this is a good concept and a good bill, and I hope we can move it forward. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shutt? No. Okay. Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. Is this study going to be costing any money? And is there a fiscal note on this? And if so, how much?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Samuelson, the legislation gets its funding sources from an outdated fund called the Housing Bond Credit Enhancement Fund. And I believe we don't have a fiscal note in the bill yet. There isn't one because, we're transferring the money within the year. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Samuelson, there isn't a fiscal note to this bill because we are transferring money from our Housing Bond Credit Enhancement Fund internally, and that's why we are here before the committee today, is to get the approval of the legislature for us to use those monies in the purpose to do this study.
Thank you.
Follow-up? Samuelson.
Then if it's going to be, money is going to be transferred, the fund that it is being transferring from, is that going to be an issue that those dollars would be removed and go into the other fund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, we've spoken with members of both sides of the aisle, and that program would be basically discontinued. It's an underutilized fund that hasn't really been accessed extensively. Yeah, just with Carver County, there's a... Yeah, so, I mean, one initiative in Carver County. So there's a long history going back approximately 10 years where, you know, the balance in this fund was been $2 million since 1996.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just going to make a couple comments. I have spoken with the bill author and Mr. Shetman, and I think that there might be some opportunities for some improvements to the bill. I think that, first of all, I'm hoping that a budget will be presented when it goes to taxes. $2 million to me seems like a lot of money to conduct a study of this sort. and would want to make sure that money's being used effectively. The second thing is that I'm always concerned about mission creep in the Met Council, and I'm taking on more duties, and I've talked about the possibility of sunsetting this group. And then if they really need to continue to exist, they can come back to the legislature and make a case for their existence and their funding source. And then the third thing, and which I think is probably getting at the crux of the issue here, is that with the proposed development under Framework 2030, do we have enough water to sustain that level and rate of development? And in looking at the duties of this advisory committee, there appears to be no duty of the committee to evaluate what they find out about the water and its relationship to the rate of growth and development proposed over the next 20 years. And so I'd like to see some language that would require this group to put the two together, if you will, to see if, in fact, we can sustain the rate of a development in the particular areas or watersheds, if you will, that's being proposed under the framework. And they might come to the realization that there's certain areas that don't have enough water supply to sustain the rate and density of development that's being proposed.
Representative Fulberg, are you on the tech committee, or are you thinking you want to do a sunset here? I like that.
Well, I don't want to waste the committee's time, and I believe that Mr. Shetman and Representative Garofalo are in agreement with the points I've talked to Representative Hornstein. He is also in agreement with the points that I've raised. If there's anybody in the committee that would vehemently object to those issues being added to the bill as it moves along, if they want to, we could probably have a discussion here. But again, I don't want to bog down the committee process.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Holberg. I'll just put in my word for supporting what you're saying as well and be amenable.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg,
I
look forward. Obviously, this bill has a long ways to go in the Government Operations Committee. That's where we're really going to see these amendments that have been suggested. And I do look forward to working with Representative Holberg as well as others in addressing the concerns she's mentioned.
Further discussion, Representative Sharon.
I guess piggybacking off of Representative Holberg here and expanding the role of the Met Council, this work isn't being done by the DNR already, or we're not duplicating work already done by the DNR or work that the DNR itself should be doing?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Keith Bettelman from our Metropolitan Council Environmental Services to come down to address that.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Keith Bettelman. I'm Assistant General Manager of Metropolitan Council Environmental Services. In answer to the question, the Department of Natural Resources is working on aspects of this now, as is the Minnesota Geologic Survey, the U.S. Geologic Survey, and a number of other agencies. By coordinating the efforts of various agencies throughout the metropolitan area, we would be pulling together all of these studies into a comprehensive look at water supply in the metropolitan area.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I do want to apologize to the committee. The testifier didn't get the memo about the suit and the shirt matching. So,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbrook.
And if I might, to that point, Representative Sharon, the City of Lakeville has an ongoing problem with balancing the standards of the DNR and well interference claims with the rate of development that's being requested by the Met Council for the city to attain. And they keep going round and round with EPA, DNR, Met Council, and so I think there is some value to getting all these agencies at the same table and trying to work this out. If you have one agency telling a community you have to grow by 30,000 people in the next 15 to 20 years, and then if there's any well interference claims because Lakeville is drilling new wells every 2 years, whoever drilled the last well has to pay anybody that was upstream earlier, and there were standards that we're having wells being drawn in the rural areas that weren't deep enough, and then Lakeville was having to come in and redo. Mm. Well, I mean, it's just a continuing mess, and so I think there is value to this in trying to address some of those issues.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo or Mr. Shetman, that $2 million that's sitting in the housing bond credit fund, that obviously must have been a one-time appropriation that won't return if you take it. And I'm quite frankly surprised we missed that as legislators in raiding every fund we could find. But since we did miss that one, how did that money get there in the first place? Where did that come from?
Representative Lencheski, I'm going to ask Mr. Chair. Representative Lencheski, I'm going to ask Beth Woods from Anderson, who's the CFO at the Med Council, to come down and address that for you.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Beth Woods from Anderson. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Metropolitan Council. Mr. Chair and Representative Lencheski, this money came from, let me just go back and provide a little bit of history. In the 1980s and the early 1990s, the council was responsible for siting landfills. In 1990, we issued some bonds to site a landfill, to continue siting landfills, and the following year, the authority to site new landfills was repealed by the legislature. So we had a $4 million bond issue. Some of that money has been used in the past for a couple of grant funds, which the legislature gave us authority for. And then the $2 million was used for this credit enhancement program. That's been in effect since 1994, as was testified to earlier. Because it hasn't worked very well for the cities and the counties, we've had one program that we've credit enhanced. But since that hasn't been a real popular program and the money's not been used, the $2 million has been sitting there. The bonds have been retired just now in 2005, and so the council brought forward this proposal.
Further questions to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Garofalo renews his motion that House File 1044 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. All those in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the bill is passed to be sent to re-referred to the Government Operations Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Shetman, Representative Garofalo. Next members, we have House File 994 and House File 995. We're not going to move those bills immediately, but I'm going to call up Representative Earhart's bill, House File 995, for discussion and presentation, and then we'll call up House File 994 for their presentation, and we've discussed this with both the authors, and we'll be moving one of the bills after that, after we hear some discussion, and go forward with one of the other bills. But for now, we're just going to call it up for a presentation and discussion, and we'll take testimony following the presentation of both bills. If there's any concerns or questions with that, now's your time. That's it. Okay. We'll go forward. Representative Earhart, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here on behalf of House File 995, which is a bill that repeals the limits that limits the compensation of local government employees to 95% of the governor's salary. It also limits the process for requesting a waiver from the cap. Now, the brief history of this affair is that in 1997, a law was passed prohibiting salaries of local government employees to exceed the salary of the Commissioner of Finance. 79, a law passed increasing the limitation to 105% of the salary of the Commissioner of Finance. 1980, a law passed repealing the cap. 83, law passed limiting the salary of local government employees to 95% of the salary of the governor, and medical doctors were exempt. 1988, law passed to define the salary of local government employees to include deferred compensation and allocation to individual retirement annuities. 92, law passed that extended to doctors of osteopathy, am I saying that right? The exemption from salary caps. In 93, law provided the salary, not only the salary, but also the value of all other forms of compensation provided to a local government employee may not exceed 95% of the governor's salary. In 98, a law passed that exempted school districts from the local government salary cap. 203, a law passed to exempt the employees of public-owned hospitals from the salary cap. In other words, we now have exempted from the salary cap school districts, employees of public-owned hospitals, medical doctors, and doctors of osteopathy. Am I saying that right? I don't think so. So, for a number of years, local governments have been urging the legislature to repeal a compensation limit for local officials. In Minnesota, would you note, is the only state in the nation that caps the compensation of local government employees. That's because we don't trust those people out there. Isn't that a shame? We don't trust the people who are elected right next to the people. You guys are way away from the people that elected you, but they're right out there every at least once or twice a month facing up to them. But we don't trust them. Since the limit of compensation for the governor has not been adjusted for 7 years, it's beginning to affect a large number of positions in different jurisdictions. And you've noticed from time to time that we have various articles in the newspaper. Star had one 129.05 about how a couple of the counties are getting around the compensation, but because they can't retain employees that the type that they would like to. We have inflation that's been going on since 1998. Last time the governor's salary was raised, it was set at 120. So local government employees have been capped at 114 in round numbers since then. We have national and regional markets that we're competing for these folks that we want to staff our counties and our city governments. And they are many cities and counties are experiencing problems recruiting and retaining top-level employees because of this very unique to Minnesota salary and imposed cap. We also have the problem that within in a local jurisdiction where we have especially the union employees who keep advancing their cause and getting increases every year, they are now face-to-face with the same salary as their managers because the managers don't get any boost, but the union employees keep making it close to they becoming the manager salary-wise. This law, I think, also draws an inappropriate comparison between the compensation of career public servants and salaries of elected officials. The limit compares the compensation of local government employees to the salary of the governor. And the salary of the governor is not his total compensation. It's been estimated that the governor's compensation probably exceeds $250,000, not just a salary of $120,000. Whereas the local officials' compensation includes other benefits besides salary. And we also should remember that these people that work in the local and other units of government are career public servants. They are not elected officials that come and go with the winds of fortune. They're there to make certain that the counties and the cities are run properly over time, and they have to raise their families based on that. And they send their kids to school like other salary employees. They're not like you, the folks who are high living folks that are $31,100 a year. They're actually there for the long term and trying to continue to provide for their families. I also might suggest that the waiver process that has been set up is not working to the advantage of anyone any longer. In fact, the word on the street is that the doer has adopted a no more waiver stance. I think I've heard that with another name. But that seems to be their attitude in a lot of cases. What House File, and again I repeat that local government officials are really elected and accountable to their constituents. They stand up to them a couple of times a month usually at a council meeting and, or the commissioners, something less than that, and they can be turned out of office if they raise the salaries of their administrators too high, which is not likely that they're going to do that. House File 995 would appeal a local government compensation limits and trust local elected officials to represent and serve the best interests of their communities on this issue. And I think we have some folks that would like to testify.
Maybe there's not.
I don't know. What would you prefer, Mr. Chairman? You want Representative Lanning to present his bill before we have the testifiers?
Yeah, Representative Earhart. We don't want to get into those for or against the bill until we have both bills brought up before the committee and discussed for the members. So if you don't have anybody else to present on your bill, then at this time we'll have Representative Lanning present his bill. But to get to the proponents and opponents, we want to hold that off until we have both bills brought up. And members, we're doing this because both bills address the same issue. And we thought we should just have all the different proposals put on the table for everybody to see and listen to before we make a decision, knowing that there was a couple different ways to approach this issue that's being brought up. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I'm Maury Lanning, House District 9A. I can support, in fact, I'm a co-author on Representative Earhart's bill. And the reason I am is I believe from my local government experience that local government can, in fact, be trusted to set salaries for their people. The salaries are well known in our communities, as all of you who've had local government experience know. And if we get carried away as a local unit of government, the people will rein us in quickly. Recognizing that Representative Earhart's bill goes to the limit and repeals it, I felt it was important that we also take a look at another option, an option that would take a more moderate approach to this and set the limit at 125% of the governor's salary instead of the current 95%. Let me just reiterate a couple of important facts with regard to this issue. This has not been in place in Minnesota throughout our history. This kind of restriction has been around since 1977, and it's been tied to the governor's salary since 1983. But Minnesota is the only state in the union to do this. We're the only one. And this policy, in my view, has created a number of problems. You've heard about exemptions that have been granted, and I think they've been granted for good reason. But there's also been inconsistency with regard to exemptions, and inconsistency on the processing and improving of exemptions. Now, the governor's salary has been $120,303 since 1998, and as I think we all know, it's highly unlikely that that's going to be increased anytime soon, certainly not probably for at least two more years. Well, that is creating a problem for many local units of government who are finding it more and more difficult to attract and retain highly qualified people, especially when we're the only state in the union that does this. This is also, I think, creating a compression problem. If your top people are not able to receive increases because of this cap. That means that the people beneath them, in terms of the structure, are also going to be held back in terms of their compensation. That's going to create problems there as well. My bill, House File 994, does a couple of things. First, it sets the cap at 125% of the governor's salary, and this also affects the pension provision, as you notice in Section 2. And this bill also expedites the review of the exemption request, something that I think for those who still end up needing to apply for an exemption, an easier chance for that to be considered in a timely and expeditious manner. With that, Mr. Chairman and members, there are a number of people who would like to speak to this, and if I might first suggest that Auditor Pat Anderson be asked to come forward, first of all, because she is under another time constraint, and perhaps she might want to come forward first of all.
Thank you, Representative Lanny. Auditor Anderson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you. I will not go over a lot of the arguments that were made. I agree with all of them, pretty much. I think from the standpoint of the auditor's office, we're concerned about several things. One of them is the fairness issue. Another is which deals with the compression problem that you've essentially this cap has created through local government. There are several local governments where three levels are making the same amount of pay, and you have some top-level managers that haven't essentially had a raise in 7 years, and as long as this continues, it's going to continue. You know, they're going to continue to be at zero. And I understand these are very difficult fiscal times. We've all tried to keep a lid on things, and it's not necessarily the time to talk about salary increases, but it needs to be done because nothing's been done for 7 years, and it can't, I don't think, continue to go on for the... It's causing a lot of problems. The other issue, from my standpoint, is transparency. We did a superintendent salary compensation study about a year and a half ago. You all had a copy of that, and we talked about transparency and the fact that local governments are, and this is occurring, as we've all read in the paper, in counties and cities, that local governments are essentially paying on the back end because they're trying to either not be transparent or, in this case, they're trying to get around the salary cap somehow. It's being done more and more in cities and counties, and it's legal. We looked at it. It's perfectly legal to give extra vacation days that they can cash out when they leave, not that particular year, but when they leave. And I think that that's creates bad public policy when you do those sorts of things out of desperation or whatever is being done. It creates just a big lack of transparency in the government process, and that will continue unless either the cap is raised the governor's salary is raised or whatever you decide as a committee. I do not support repealing the cap. In fact, I know there's an amendment that brings the school salaries back under the cap, and we took a look at this particular amendment. If it was set at the cap was set at $150,000 or something, which is kind of what's being proposed, there are only 13 school employees that we could find as of 2003 that are above that currently. And so if you were to pass the amendment that would bring the schools back under the cap and treat them the same, fairly, the same as the other local governments, which I believe very strongly that they are the same education-wise, what they do, how the number of employees, and et cetera. If you were to bring them under, it would only affect a few people, and this amendment actually grandfathers in those 13 people. So I would encourage you also to look at that amendment. But I think the committee, I hope that that you do act this year, whether you act as raising the percentage of the cap or the raising the dollar amount and indexing it for inflation or ultimately raising the governor's salary a few years out. However you decide to do that, I'm supportive of that. I'm not I don't have a set position of X percent or do this or do that. But I think you need to keep a cap. I'd encourage you to bring the school employees back under that cap and treat them the same as the other local government officials, and hopefully to do something that does index for inflation long term. So that's my testimony. Thank you.
Any questions for the auditor?
Okay, thank you.
Anderson, one thing that I have, mm-hmm. and this is either for Representative Earhart, Representative Lanning, or maybe you're mm-hmm. aware of this. Representative Earhart mentioned that the governor's salary is really up in the range of $250,000. Are you aware of, and Representative Earhart will be up here again, I'm sure he can mm-hmm. respond to it. Representative Lanning, maybe you know. I just thought that was a important point that I'd like to see expounded upon, and I thought I'd bring it up while you're here in case you're familiar with the background on that as well.
Mr. Chair Olson, I don't know how to come to that. I suspect that they take into the car and the house and those sort of things. I don't know. I haven't done the numbers on it, and I don't necessarily have a position. I know that the governor's salary has been traditionally raised in an 8-year cycle or so when the incumbent governor is not running again, but we of course had a one-term governor before, and so I don't know what it should be set at. I haven't done any comparison of other states at all. I think though if you will run into an issue if you raise the governor's salary, for instance, 2 years out after the next election cycle, you can set a cap at a certain percentage. So if you go out and raise the governor's salary 20% or something, then all of a sudden this number for local government is going to grow dramatically. It would be then 45% or 48% if you. So I would hope that you take that into account also as you're deciding how to deal with this whole issue.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Questions?
Representative Lanning.
The next person that would like to speak would be Laura Offerdahl, representing the League of Minnesota Cities.
Representative Lanning, I assume then you want to actually go into the testimony now. You got a list of people for the bill?
We do.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to move the bill, House File 994. It would be recommended to pass and re-refer to State Government Finance.
Representative Lanning moves that House File 994 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Representative Lanning, I'm just trusting that you've worked all this out with Representative Earhart. I wanted to be cooperative with both of you and wanted to make sure there was time for the committee members to discuss and get their sense of things, too. So with that, the motion is before us. The bill is now before us. And welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Laura Offerdahl. I'm here representing the League of Minnesota Cities. Local governments have been working on this salary cap issue for a number of years. We've been supporting changes to the cap or a complete repeal of the cap because we've seen a growing number of positions in a growing number of jurisdictions be affected by this salary cap law. Based on our most recent salary survey at the League of Minnesota Cities and the counties survey as well, we know that there are 47 positions that are currently at the cap that cannot be paid anymore unless they receive a waiver from the state. We know that there are another 67 positions in cities and counties that are within 5% of that cap and at $108,000+. And so we know that there are a number of positions that are affected. We're seeing this problem grow since the governor's salary has not been increased in so many years. These positions are not just the top managers or administrators in these communities. It affects a number of other positions within these organizations. We're seeing department directors, IT directors, city attorneys, county attorneys, other folks that are impacted by this cap, not just the top manager. So the compression issue is very real. The League of Minnesota Cities supports repealing the salary cap on the compensation limit on local officials. We do believe that these decisions should be left up to local elected officials who are accountable to their taxpayers and voters. We would support as an alternative some kind of increase in the cap as a way to give us some additional flexibility, or cities additional flexibility, to keep some of their top talent here in Minnesota and not lose them to other states. But I'm going to turn it over to a couple of witnesses who are here to elaborate and provide some additional information for the committee to consider. With me here is Mike Madigan, who is a city council member with the city of Woodbury. And after Mike, we're going to ask Mark Sabora, who is a city attorney from the city of Hutchinson, to join us.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Madigan. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives. My name is Mike Madigan. I'm a member of the Woodbury City Council, and I appreciate the opportunity to briefly address the committee on the local government compensation limit. As Representatives Earhart and Lanny mentioned, Minnesota is the only state that limits the compensation of local government employees, and this state-imposed cap has put Minnesota at a competitive disadvantage when it comes to recruiting and retaining top-level government administrators. And that was recently illustrated in an experience in Woodbury last year. Our city administrator of 17 years retired. We engaged a nationally known recruiting firm so that we could attract the best and the brightest across the country so that we could replace the excellent city administrator that was retiring. The name of that firm was Jerry Aldani and Associates. We were advised by that recruiting firm that the Minnesota salary cap clearly dampened interest nationwide and did detrimentally impact our ability to attract the widest pool of applicants. And in fact, we had a smaller pool of applicants than we had originally anticipated, and we were able to hire a very capable city administrator, but I do believe that the salary cap had an impact on our search. The salary cap laws had a disproportionate negative effect on our longest tenured administrators. These individuals have been actively recruited for leadership positions outside Minnesota or here in the private sector many times over in their careers because of their reputation for excellent service and their ability to deliver results. And this intellectual capital is in jeopardy if the cap remains unchanged. Because the limit has not been increased in several years, more and more positions in a greater number of cities and counties are affected by the cap. In addition to recruitment and retention challenges, the limit has resulted in other problems such as compression of local pay plans to the point where managers and directors are making as much as the chief administrator, and I think you can all appreciate the challenges that that creates, an inability of local elected officials to compensate administrators and other professionals at market rates or to reward them for excellent performance, which creates a real retention challenge for the best and the brightest in our state. Inequitable treatment of similar positions in different jurisdictions. For example, an attorney general's opinion exempts sheriffs and county attorneys from the limit, but police chiefs and city attorneys are not exempt. And obviously, I think they should be treated the same, and that was alluded to in some prior remarks. So for all those reasons, we urge you to repeal this limit and to trust local elected officials to make these important decisions involving local employee compensation. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Did you, Ms. Offerdahl, did you have one more to testify before you take questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mark Sabora from the City of Hutchinson.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sabora. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mark Sabora, and I'm the city attorney for the City of Hutchinson. And it's a pleasure to be with you all here today. I did have a couple of remarks I'd like to make. Some of the themes, unfortunately, seem to be recurring in the amount of information you've already received here today. But like many of you, I'm involved in interviewing and negotiating salaries with city employees for the City of Hutchinson. And I firmly believe that a city should be entitled to hire the best and brightest person available for the position that a city might have open. As a city, we compete with other cities and states, but more significantly, we compete with private entities, private companies, and private organizations. It would be extremely helpful if we could be placed on equal footing with other states and private businesses because, in a sense, we're all competing for the same pool of applicants. The salary cap presents a huge detriment to cities in terms of hiring and retaining quality employees. I've had the unfortunate experience of having to go through the exemption process through the Department of Employee Relations. In fact, the City of Hutchinson had a opening with the utilities for the City of Hutchinson a couple of years ago. The process to go through DUER ended up taking about 6 months, and in that time period, the utilities manager received another offer to go with the private firm, And even though we did actually end up getting the exemption, by the time we had gotten that, the employee had left. And that's really why I'm here today, because we've now successfully been able to hire another general manager for our natural gas and electric utility in Hutchinson, but that person's already bumping up against the salary cap. And I really rue the day that I have to go through that process again, only to be disappointed and have the person leave and then start the hiring process all over again to fill that position. It makes it very tough, just as the prior person that testified indicated. When a person's being recruited by another entity and you have this negotiation going back and forth, makes it very difficult to be competitive when that person can go to a private company and make much more than they can make working for a city. It's even compounded by the fact that since the city has to abide by the open meeting laws and other constraints that it has, many times it's 72 hours before we can even get a counteroffer to that person. So it would be just one thing that would make the hiring process for the cities much easier if that salary cap could be eliminated. The city of Hutchinson also has, I think, another detriment. Even though it's a very, very fine city, I'm happy to work there. Unfortunately, we compete against the metropolitan area for getting our employees. And if that employee is limited to the amount of money that they can make, they're up against salary cap, many times they'll choose the amenities of the Twin Cities over working for Hutchinson or maybe some other rural community. So it would be nice to be able to offer an increase in salary perhaps to counterbalance that. That's all the information that I have today. I'd be happy to take any questions if you had any.
Questions for the testifiers? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Mr. Landon can answer this, or maybe Council or Ms. Dyson can answer. When was this? What was the reason for putting the salary cap in place?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, since I wasn't here at the time,
I wasn't either.
I was a local government official in 1977. I do not know what the legislative intent or purpose was back in 1977, and perhaps Ms. Dyson or someone else may have some institutional history here. That
Ms. Dyson, words of wisdom.
Mr. Chair, unfortunately, not many. I don't have the information here. I believe there is information that I have upstairs that may provide some background on the why this was initially enacted, but I honestly can't recall at the moment.
Mr. Chair, anybody in the audience want to give us some historical background?
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
I'm John Call, and I've been around since 1971. And I do remember that this was something that State Senator Don Moe inflicted on the state in 1977, and I think he had some concerns about salaries at the time, obviously, but it was Senator Moe that did Don Moe that took the lead on this, and that's all I can tell you. But that's where it did come from, and it was at that time.
Further question, Mr. Paul? Was there ever anything in the discussion about the tail wagging the dog instead of the dog wagging the tail?
Mr. Chairman. Through the mists of time, I don't remember a lot of the discussion about it. I just remember that it was Senator Moe that was, and he chaired the Government Op Committee, and it was kind of his, you know, number one issue in 77, and he was in a premier position to make it happen.
I know I've always thought about it logically, and tried to anyway, but everybody's logic is a little different, and I'm reminded of the days in which we established an all-volunteer army. And I remember being raised and told about going into the military and serving your country, and then they came out with the all-volunteer army, and all of a sudden there was a paycheck. But yet it's really not, you know, like you would get paid elsewhere, but you get a lot of benefits, you get a lot of training, and you're serving your country. And that's the way I've always looked at this.
This is public service. This is why I never support a legislative pay increase. This is why all these salaries are, you know, if we compared all of our positions to the private sector, they're all, we're getting paid less considerably than we would be in the private sector, and that's why it has the handle public service. And there's other benefits that go with it, I think, that offset that somewhat and maybe a lot, depending on the position. But I just wonder if that wasn't a part of it, because I've always viewed this as public service, as well as the local positions involving public service, but people have to make a living with those. It's not part-time like this is, and maybe that's really the question before us, whether or not these wages are sufficient to be called to make a living and still be positions of public service. Enough editorial for me.
Representative
Wardlaw.
Thank you. I was before you. You just didn't know it. Okay. The difference would be, just for discussion, is we're elected and the people they're talking about are not.
Mm-hmm.
So that might have a whole different bearing on the issue.
Representative Wardlaw, that might mean we should get paid more. We put up with elections. Just kidding. Other discussion. Representative Cornish.
Are you ready for opposition yet, or do you want to wait?
As soon as Representative Lanning tells us he has all his testifiers and Representative Earhart tells us they have all their people done for their testimony, when their testimony is complete, then we'll take opposition. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have one more testifier on to speak from a city perspective, from a municipal utility perspective. One of my constituents from Moorhead, Mr. Bob Swenson, who is a member of the Moorhead Public Service Commission that oversees our municipal utility.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the commission, I'm Bob Swenson. I'm one of the commissioners of the Moorhead Public Service Commission. And I note that you talked earlier about public service, and I want you to know firsthand that it's not my compensation that it's issue here. We're very proud in Moorhead of our Public Service Commission. We provide electric and water utilities to our community. We have for the last 100 years or more. And we are proud that we are the lowest cost provider of electricity in our region, comparing us to Fargo and the co-ops around us. So we're very proud of how efficient we run our operation. And it's been very, very important to our city. So in terms of the compensation we pay the people that work there, you know, we are not overcompensating our people. This year, the salary cap has become very real to our utility. Our general manager, and general managers usually in municipal utilities have electrical engineering degrees. It's very sophisticated, as you know, in running dealing with electricity. We had hoped that this salary cap issue would go away, and it sort of caught us by surprise that our manager is now at the cap. He hit the cap last year, and we have been unable to give him a raise until we know if we're going to be able to. We know that there are other avenues that we could follow through using vacation or playing some games to increase his salary or compensation, or we can apply for a waiver. But we also know that applying for that waiver is not necessarily going to get us what we need. We are very proud of the staff we have. Our manager has been with us for 10 years. Our commission, those that govern the operation, the commissioners, feel we are very fair to our employees. We expect a lot of them. In fact, we're now investigating and voting on whether we'll provide a high-speed broadband internet to our whole community here in the next month. And so that job is even going to become greater than it is today. But we do expect high quality performance both from our manager and our key executives underneath. There is that bias that occurs. If you cap the general manager, that's going to put downward pressure on what we can pay the other key employees who also have professional degrees that are necessary to run a good utility. These people are the tools that we need to run our organization. And certain types of equipment cost more than other types of equipment, just like certain types of people cost more. excuse me, I talked with our recruiter today, who we use when we need to hire a new manager. And that person, I asked, if Bill left today, how much would it cost us to find somebody with Bill's experience? I was told $140,000. That's way over the cap. If we go and try to recruit somebody that has less experience, we're probably down at that $90,000 level. But we would have to tell them, but you're coming to a state where you can look forward to hitting that cap if you're successful. Now, it's hard enough to attract people to take a look at our region when they're looking around the country when the first question is, gee, it's really cold up there. Well, when you add to it that the compensation isn't much warmer either, you know, that creates a hurdle for us that really hurts us, and it's artificial. The cap is totally irrelevant to the marketplace. And we can't ignore the marketplace, and this impacts other areas as well. So we ask you to give us some relief, because we don't think it's fair to our employees to have to go and do strange things to give them compensation, or that we would have to, I call it, beg from some other person to give them a raise. That's not fair to them, and we ask your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swenson. And just to make a note here, it's a good suggestion that I've received is to try to keep our testimony for all of you coming yet. We have an additional four people besides what was on the agenda. And when I ask for other testimony, who knows how many more will come? I'd like to ask that we try to keep our testimony to new points, or come up and say ditto, things like that. But we're concerned about running out of time, and we'd like to finish today. Question, Representative Garofalo is gone now. Okay, we'll take him later. Representative Lanning, more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We now have some folks from a county perspective. Keith Carlson, representing the Metropolitan Inter-County Association, will start off.
Welcome to the meeting, Mr. Carlson. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director with Metropolitan Inter-County Association. That consists of five counties here in the Twin City metropolitan area and seven counties in greater Minnesota. I want to start by mentioning the experience of our counties to make it clear that this is not just a Twin Cities issue. Five of my counties have requested exceptions from the salary cap from the Department of Employee Relations. Two of those five counties are in greater Minnesota counties. In addition, we have three other counties with employees up or very against or very near to the cap. Two of those three are greater Minnesota, so this is not simply a Twin City metropolitan issue. We strongly support both Representative Lanning and Representative Earhart's bill. First place, we support it because simply the current cap is getting to be absurd in its administration. As you've already heard, schools are out, not just school superintendents, but every school employee is not just subject to the cap. County attorneys, county sheriffs are out from underneath the county, but yet their analogous positions of the city police chiefs, fire chiefs, or city attorneys are not subject to cap. There's a further exception that all healthcare professionals who work at city or county operated hospitals or clinics are not subject to the cap, but whereas medical professionals who work out in the fields or in our health departments are subject to cap. I'd extend that absurdity to also the current administrative request process that you've heard mentioned. We currently have the Ramsey County Manager, who has requested an exception to the cap twice and been turned down by the Department of Employee Relations, but yet this very same individual received an exception to the cap in his previous position as City and County Administrator for St. Louis County, a much smaller county both population and budget-wise. Nobody can explain to me that that's a rational decision. To give you some idea of why we need to increase the cap, I think it's worthwhile going over just what we're competing against just here within the Midwest. Currently, by a survey done by the ICMA, the International City and County Managers Association, we know, even though only 25% of cities and counties actually respond to the survey that they conduct annually, that our city managers and county administrators could get compensation equaling $190,000. The 75th percentile of compensation that's available in those other states' local governments is nearly $137,000. So we simply do not compete even with the public sector. But I will add, frankly, we are competing with the private sector for our employees, too. We clearly compete with the private sector for our IT managers, for our finance officials, and we're simply not competitive. I just want to conclude then in saying that the salary cap is creating some very real and current problems. We are losing officials to other states, whether it's Charlie Meyer, the former city manager from the city of St. Louis Park, who's gone on to better compensation and also warmer climates in Virginia Beach, or the former county manager of Ramsey County, who's now employed at substantially greater compensation in California, and there are any number of other examples. Rather than this not being the time to raise the cap because of the financial difficulties that the state is facing right now, I would strongly suggest it is the time to raise the cap because the type of talent that we need to deal with those problems is exactly the sort of talent that we're losing because of this cap. The several counties that I represent who have requested exceptions to the cap have among the lowest tax rates and lowest levies per capita, and I would suggest that's exactly because they have this very competent and unfortunately high-priced talent that they're able to do that. I guess, you know, you really need good management to weather the fiscal storms. I'll conclude my comments at this point and be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for stepping out there. Just a couple of quick questions. Number one, what's the total number of waivers that are currently allowed at the state level right now?
Mr. Chairman, I believe there have been at least 56 requests. There was a report that was been completed on this in draft form by the Legislative Coordinating Commission's working group within the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. They documented 54. I know of at least two more requests that have been made since that time. It's basically been hit or miss has to been what's been allowed. I just went through one of those requests from Ramsey County that was turned down twice.
Representative Grapple.
Mr. Chairman, if the 125, and this might be a little bit difficult of a question to answer, but if we went to the 125% level, any idea how many of those 56 would fall off the rolls?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, the majority of them would fall off the rolls. Most of the exceptions that have been granted, and frankly, most of the exceptions that have been requested, have been below that 125% tabs, the 125% threshold.
Mr. Chairman, final question.
Representative Garofalo.
Is there any way for us to have an expectation of the number of waivers we can anticipate over the next 2 years if we didn't make any sort of reform?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would guess that there will be very few requests that would be made if the cap would be increased to the 125%.
So if it left it the same, if it was left the same, any expectation?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Representative, frankly, as you've heard mentioned by the other testifiers, the Department of Employee Relations has been granting they've granted only one exception under the current administration. So most local governments, even though we know there are 47 people out there who could come in and request an exception right now, aren't going to bother because they are fairly confident they're going to be denied. As you've, I think, been inferred by some of the previous testifiers, it's a quite lengthy process, frequently requiring the engagement of a consultant to put together the information to go through that process, and because of the most recent request almost all of them be denied, local governments simply are going not going to the expense of the work of requesting them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions?
Thank Mr. You, Chairman, then if I could ask Washington County Dick Stafford to be the next testifier.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Stafford. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed. Just want to encourage you again to try to keep your comments as much as possible to new points.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. One of the advantages of being late on the agenda is everybody else has given my speech, so I do have one or two points I'd like to make. I'm a county commissioner from Washington County, Stillwater County seat. You're all elected, so I'm sure you've heard the term that we ought to run our governments like we run business. When people say that, they don't mean WorldCom or Enron. They don't mean the football players you're going to see next season making $1 million a game. They don't mean the CEO that takes a company to the verge of bankruptcy and then is given multi-million-dollar golden parachutes just to get rid of that person. We're talking about career people who are not elected, who have specifically chosen to come to government and bring with them master's degrees in administration, political science, or whatever. I want to make my point with just Washington County's example. Our administrator's been with us for 20 years. He's at the cap. He supervises 1,000 employees, 13 departments, $150 million budget, and with the sterling guidance of county commissioners like myself, gets in a dogfight every year with Dakota County over who has the lowest property tax rate in the state. That's the county portion of the tax. His reward for that? No adjustment in his salary since the year 2000. Nothing. Other than what normal, it might be changes in health insurance or whatever, that we apply to all employees. The part about this law, that I find disturbing, is that we have a man who we know, not from him, because he's not that kind of guy, but we know from other sources, he's had 3 offers for jobs at much higher salaries. He likes Washington County. He likes his job. He even likes me. You know? So the bottom line is, in order for this man to expand his income, he has to quit. So then we get a variance. We can pay the next person a higher salary, and we start from zero on experience within Washington County. I'm having a hard time fathoming that. I think the distinction that's been made here, that these are not elected people. I went from an $85,000 a year auditor treasurer job with the county. The county commissioner had half of that because that was the choice I made as an elected person. These people come to government with these master's degrees. We have people in Washington County with doctorates running government, city government in this case. I just think there's a clear distinction and we ought to accommodate that. I agree that adjusting the cap is probably going to be more fruitful than trying to... I'm not opposed to abolishing this thing. If you do that, we won't have to keep coming back here. Not that we don't enjoy it. But raise the cap, and at least we'll stave this off until better times. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any questions?
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, next, if we could permit Commissioner Mike Podolsky from Olmsted County to have an opportunity to testify.
Mr. Podolsky, welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record, please.
Mike Podolsky, County Commissioner, Olmsted County. This is my 19th year to be a county commissioner. I've been watching this for some time. When it started, our county was small, and this didn't impact us. But since, under my supervisorship, it has grown dramatically and quickly, and we are now bang up against the cap. As elected people, we understand the reason to scrooge down on our own salary. We've all done it, but what that does is create a problem for our professional people. And we have come to the point where we're exceeding the tolerance for a reasonable component of public service built in these jobs. I respect the point you made, Mr. Chair. But there is already that component is in there to a certain degree, and we've worn out that argument. I've told a lot of people that over the years. And when they have three or four kids that are about to go off to college, that argument gets thinner. And it's you all know about the balloon. When you squeeze it here, it goes here. And we have half a dozen people that are either directly or soon to be impacted in our balloon, and you squeeze it here, and then it goes there. We have lobes sort of squirted out in all directions, and all these lobes are beginning to get in the way of the functioning of the governmental body. You know, somebody said what a process it was to ask for a waiver. How much idle spinning of wheels do we want to do? I mean, you asked if we're going to get more waivers. You won't get any unless Dewar starts passing some. And we'll be working with our second, third, fourth, and fifth tier people then. Nobody's mentioned one-time performance. We have an official that saved us, our chief CFO, an enormous amount of money by agreeing to take in a new software product that wasn't completely developed and install it where the first site. It took him an enormous amount of work, but we can't give him even a one-time. We don't like to give general raises, but we give one-time bonuses for heroic work. We can't do that for him because it would put him over this at the moment. People talked about the apples and oranges of the governor's salary. If we fixed that, it would do it. And this problem is sapping the productivity. All the time people spend dealing with this could be better spent doing something else. If Dewar is going to put a free, apparently they have, I don't know the thinking, but they've put the ball back in your court saying, you guys deal with it, we're tired of it. And we've worn them down and we've wasted their time for a lot so much that they're tired of it trying to get around this problem. That means if Dewar won't make waivers, that means the system is broke. The question is, when do we fix it? Do we do it now when it's a productivity sapping nuisance, or do we wait till it's a total catastrophe? And you won't know the decline. You can't tell if you get the fifth best or the first best. It's not an easy thing to tell. I think the way that might help us all, what I do sometimes, is I reflect on how this committee, for example, would run if my opponent had been elected rather than myself. And if we all do that, you can probably see that the committee wouldn't run quite as well. But if it wouldn't show up in public, but it wouldn't run quite as well with the second tier people. And that's and this is all, this thing is part of centralizing government, is rather than decentralizing. It's taking the authority and the decision making back to it's the Soviet model in short words, and that it's helpful to keep order, but it doesn't work for flexibility, creativity, and it applies equally to small jurisdictions who don't have a problem and big jurisdictions, and it's time. Thank you, sir.
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, then, if we could conclude with Commissioner Nancy Schulweiler from Dakota County.
How late are we going, Mr. Chair?
Representative Cornish, Representative Lanning, how many more people do you have? We want to be fair to those who are opposed. We have this room for an additional 15 minutes after the committee, but I don't want to be insensitive to the members with their schedules, and we may end up having to move this bill into another meeting. And I'm just wondering how much more testimony do you have, because we're now off the list of what was scheduled. And I don't want to stifle anything. We just need to move on.
I'm not aware of any other testifiers.
Okay.
I understand you've been contacted by some people who want to speak, but I'm not aware of that.
Okay. But this is for the supporting side, proponents. Okay, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Nancy Schulweiler. I'm a county commissioner for Dakota County, and I serve as the legislative committee chair for the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. I'm also the first vice president of the Association of Minnesota Counties, and we have a standing policy of repealing the salary cap at the association. But I want to take this time to give you a picture of what we face as county commissioners in Dakota County and the salary cap that's in place. I'm here today to voice support for both bills, both of which could bring much needed relief to Dakota County and our employees. We were successful in obtaining a waiver for our county administrator in 2003, but we have many other employees who are restricted from receiving justly deserved compensation because of the salary cap. Currently, we have 11 administrators that are also at the salary cap. These administrators also have to supervise and work with employees that are also being paid the same amount of salary that they're being paid. The compression that's caused by the salary cap eliminates the compensation distinctions between the differing level of job responsibilities that are established to comply with the Local Government Pay Equity Act. We are no longer able to maintain our compliance with that act in those situations. Dakota County is the third largest county in the state of Minnesota. We have over 380,000 residents. Our annual budget is over $300 million. About $100 million of that is paid in property taxes. Other funds are mostly passed through grant programs that Dakota County administers. If Dakota County were a private business, we would rank 55th in Minnesota. Like a business, Dakota County has tried to be frugal and responsible in our governance, resulting in arguing with Washington County over who has the lowest property taxes in the state. We are a very lean machine in that we have the lowest per capita ratio of county staff per 1,000 residents. If we were to be, on average, the same size of government that our neighbors in the other metropolitan counties, we would have to hire another 800 employees. We expect a lot out of the professional people that we employ in Dakota County. There's no distinction in the salary cap based on the size of the county that staff are administering. You could be in Rock County or you could be in Dakota County and you could still make the same amount of money. School superintendents within Dakota County that have much smaller budgets, less employees to supervise, and fewer constituents or clients are making substantially more in their salaries than our county administrator. If you were to compare Dakota County to Johnson County, Kansas, which is really a little bit smaller than Dakota County, their county administrator earns over $158,000 per year.
Excuse me, Ms. Schuller. I don't wish to cut you off, but we do need to keep moving in. And do you have any additional points to bring up?
Yes, I do, and it speaks to the professionalism versus the elected and the inflation rate and how these people who are professionals manage to stay within the economy. Over the past decade, the average Minnesotan's real increase in earned income above inflation has been approximately 23 to 25%. Our county administrator's real earned income increased 1% over the last 6 years. The differential between our county administrator's cash salary and upper-level employees has shrunk from a 20% differential when he was hired 13 years ago to 3.5%. These people chose this profession. They have families. They aren't doing this part-time. And they need to have some ability to have their wages be compensated for the rate of work that they do and keep them competitive and maintain inflationary increases at the minimum. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Chair. How many opponents are there? I just also concerned about
Representative
the time.
Neymar.
We have a caucus at 2:30.
Okay. So we have. Do members have objections to going until 2:30?
I can't stay.
We have a caucus at
2:30. Let's just keep going till a couple minutes after. We have four people. Representative Lennon, you don't have any more testimony. We have four people on the list who would like to testify. It's not clear to me whether or not they are all opposed. John Kiselishin? Begging your pardon.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Cornish.
What about then our questions after all of they testify?
Representative Cornish.
Are we going to lay this over?
We're going to lay this over.
Okay, good.
We don't really have a choice.
All right.
Thank you. Appreciate your understanding. What I'd like to do is try to get through all the testimony, but we're really not giving those in opposed a lot of time. I'll discuss this with them and see whether or not we'll let some of the opposition testify again at the next meeting. Begging your pardon on the name?
No problem, Mr. Chairman.
I'm handicapped. My name is Olson.
I'm John Kiselishin is the name. Could we take the testimony from Mayor Cardinal first while they pass around my my handout here? Would that be acceptable?
You may. And begging your pardon, we really only have maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'll discuss with you folks later whether or not I want to testify a little bit at the next hearing.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Bob Cardinal. I'm a two-term mayor of Maplewood, suburb of St. Paul. We're a 37,000 population city, $35 million budget, employees less than 175. We've got a great city manager, and we're falling under this salary cap here. You're going to make my job a lot easier if you make a change, I'll tell you that. And I would think that the most important thing to address right away would be to fix this waiver system. I think the waiver system is, I don't think your numbers are way out of whack there. If it's less than 100 that you're wavering, that's something that you could address. And all the other points have been mentioned already. I think addressing the governor's salary would be a prudent thing to take care of.
Any questions? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
State your name again for the record, please.
Yes, John Kiselishin. I won't spell that for you. It's long and complicated. I served as the mayor in the city of Roseville from 2000 to 2004. I also served as a member of the League of Minnesota Cities Committee in 2001, 2002, and 2003. And I also worked in a nonpartisan position in the Minnesota Senate from the 96 to 2002 legislative session. So that's my background in government. Roseville has a population of approximately 35,000 people at night, 100,000 people during the day. I've been told that we collect as much sales tax money as the city of Rochester. I'm here to speak in opposition to the portion of this bill that refers to the lifting of the salary cap for political subdivision employees. A sheet should be passed out here, I hope, that will cover a couple of the main points, and since time is short, I'm not going to run through those. I think they're fairly self-explanatory. I do want to echo the comments that were raised here that government is not a private corporation that works on free market principles. Government is about public service. I also do not buy into the argument of local control. Cities exist at the pleasure of the state legislature. That's something that I learned in a local government class back in college. Certainly we don't let cities issue their own license plates. We don't let cities levy income tax. There are certain controls that the state should maintain. I think this is one of them. Also, I don't see this as a trust issue. I see this as a reasonable control that exists. Also, I think to echo Mayor Cardinal's comments, I heard that there were 56 requests for waivers to this cap. I would ask the question of how many local government employees there are in the state of Minnesota. There's got to be thousands of local government employees. And we're talking about 56. And I guess it just seems to me that maybe we need to look at this system of the waivers.
There's only 56 people out of several thousands that work in government service. One last thing I will touch here upon is I also have a concern about this broad brush that's being painted, that this proposal here will affect cities, as I point out in number three. Cities of 300, cities of 30,000, cities of 300,000 people are all affected by this bill. We had a recent city manager search in Roseville, and I can tell you we had no problem finding talent. We had talent within the state. We had talent from out of the state. We actually hired a person as city manager who was from Arizona, who moved up here with his family. So we didn't have a problem in Roseville competing nationally or competing locally. But I will offer a compromise, though. I think the cities like Minneapolis and St. Paul, counties like Hennepin and Ramsey, those counties are huge. Those cities are huge, and they're competing nationally. They're competing with Madison, Des Moines, St. Louis for employees. And I would just throw it as a compromise. Maybe we can take a look at this cap and put these mega cities or mega counties into one category and leave the cap on for the other 99% of the rest of us. Thank you very much.
Mr. Fisolishin. That's the name, right?
Yes, correct.
Thank you. This is the list you were referring to?
Yes, that's the list. I can answer any questions on those numbers. I didn't want to take committee's time unless there was a...
Mr.
If you want me to talk about one.
I'm actually looking at your questions. You raised some good questions. And you weren't going to go through it?
Oh, I will. If but I know time is short. I'll leave it at your discretion. I can touch upon one or two of these. Or any one that you want me to touch upon. I'm flexible.
Some of them raise very good points, and I hope members really look at it. Mm-hmm. For points of discussion later when we discuss it.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I think number one is really the biggest thing. As I've door knocked for city council candidates, I've door knocked for legislative candidates, and I have never had anybody come to the door and say, you know what, we think it's unfair that city employees can only make $110,000 a year. You know, we don't think it's fair that they get free Rotary Club dues, free lunches, paid holidays. That's just not fair. They should be getting more. I've never heard anybody raise that at the door. So,
listen, when your city hired someone from Arizona,
mm-hmm.
was the salary cap issue brought up? Were they fully informed?
They were fully informed. Right on the brochure that was sent out nationally was a section in there that informed people of this is the cap, this is what the limit is. And I think we had over, I think it was like 38 or more people we had apply for that position. We had people that applied who were willing to work in Minnesota. And with all the benefits package, I mean, the person we hired from Arizona took a lower salary. He took a $5,000 cut in pay to come to Minnesota because of the reputation this state has and because of the benefits that were being offered.
Mr. Kisolishin, deference to the other side of the issue, mm-hmm. do those benefits represent a way of getting around the cap?
Yeah, I believe they do, but I don't think that raising the cap will address that. I think there are other reasons in addition to getting around the cap as to why do these certain types of compensation appear to be hidden. Probably some of the reasons are tax reasons. I also would venture to guess that some of the reasons are honesty in government. When the city manager puts out a list of the compensation of all the city employees, he does not include his $6,000 a year car allowance. He does not include the $1,000 he gets for free Rotary Club dues. He doesn't include the $1,000 for lunch meetings. Doesn't include all the professional seminars. And the list goes on and on and on. And I mean, that's a valid reason as to why they're not putting that in there also.
Any additional questions? Representative Cornish.
I just going to say, Mr. Chairman, in Mankato, our city administrator has been up against the cap for some time. It was just in the paper, and he said that he was satisfied with his salary and the way they're compensating him somewhat is with the other compensation limits, and he and the city council seem to be fine with that.
Additional comments or questions?
And Mr. Chairman, if I can add one quick thing, there was a statement made about if an elected body goes beyond reasonableness and gives somebody a salary raise that maybe the public thinks is unreasonable, the attitude may be, well, we can throw the bums out at the next election and elect a new city council. Well, I'll just throw this out as an example. A provision in the Roseville city manager's contract says that his salary may not be lowered unless all other employees in the city's salary are lowered by the same percentage. So how is a new group of elected officials able to walk in and say, well, we're going to undo the mistake that the previous people did? If they try to do that, the manager or whoever this employee would be would claim breach of contract, and then they would want their six-month severance pay up front, and I guess they'd move on to someplace else.
Representative Lanny.
Mr. Chairman, members need to correct one thing. Car allowance is included in counting towards the cap.
Thank you, Representative Lanny. Further questions? See none. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Kislich. You got to read it. I have two other people on the list, and Mr. Paul Larson, Deputy Commissioner of Labor Relations, and Bjorn Skogquist. Now, we are over time, and what I really want to ask is, begging your pardon for any inconvenience, are you able to come back at the next hearing?
Mr. Chair, yes, I can.
Okay.
I don't know when the next hearing is, but I would be happy to do that.
It'd be on Wednesday at the same time, 12:30. If you prefer, I feel concerned. We had understood that it wouldn't take quite as long as it did for the supporting testimony. Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned about stifling your testimony. If you're amenable to that, we'll just have you come back, and you'll be the final. Is there anybody else that wanted to testify for or against this bill?
No.
Okay. You folks will be on the agenda. We'll get your names here before we leave, and this will be the first bill up on Wednesday.
Yep.
With that, members, if there's no objection, meeting adjourned. Thank you.